I'm pretty much in like Howard Hughes mode for the next month.
You have Kleenex boxes on your hands and feet.
He wants and to say sanitary again.
My fingernails.
Hello and welcome to What's the Deal, the Seinfeld review show that's recorded in the nude. Each week, we dissect every episode of Seinfeld in chronological order. With me today, for the first time in many, many moons, it's Christopher Young.
Hello.
And your old favorite, Patrick Armstrong.
Hi.
I'm Cameron Wong, and I have laryngitis. And this is episode 30, and today we will be looking at season 3, episode 13, The Subway. What do you think of my attractive new voice?
I love it. I think you should always have laryngitis.
I mean, that's not really what my voice sounds like right now. I was,
But even this part's good, too.
I was really hamming it up for that, but yeah, this part's okay. Well, if you like the way my voice sounded earlier, as the show goes on and my voice gets weaker, it will just slowly get deeper and deeper.
And sexier.
And something like that. Do you think people cared that there was no episode last week? Do you think, you know, somewhere someone was upset?
I don't know. That's a good
question. I think of two people that cared.
Justin?
I can't.
Well, I can. Justin, yeah.
And
John. And I like to think that John cared.
I care. Star Wars reference.
Star Wars, yeah. Little Han Solo.
So, Christopher Young, welcome back. How are you today?
Oh, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Well, my voice.
Besides having laryngitis.
I mean, the laryngitis is over. It's just the healing of the voice.
Mm-hmm. But no, I'm good. I'm back in Toronto.
Well, that's not the good part, though.
Certainly not.
And you just wrapped up shooting on your first film. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah, I'd love to. So the film is called Focus. It's a movie that
I
directed.
I didn't mean actually promote your film. I'm just
joking. You can plug your film.
It's a movie I directed and co-wrote along with Josh Blacker. And it's about this guy whose product is being focus tested today.
Today, like and, literally today.
Like today in the film. And we got some great people casted. You know the guy from the A&W commercials? The like employee guy? He's in our film. We got Smoking Man from X-Files. He's in the film. He was a super nice guy. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And also, we are in the middle of trying to raise money for post-production. So if you want to go to Indiegogo and search for Focus, you can contribute that way.
That was a pretty good plug.
I tried.
You even did a really good job, considering that I continued to interrupt you throughout.
Yeah.
And I mean, I had to hold myself back. I just wanted to keep interjecting. Like you're
it's all a junket. It's all a junket from here on out.
So we're going to be like in the monologue, you know, this reminds me of on Focus on the second day of shooting. Alec Guinness dropped by through a medium and told me to pursue my dreams. And that's what I'm doing. So if you want to go to Indiegogo and search for Focus, you too can help Alec Guinness promote me through my dreams.
There's another thing. If you search for Focus on Indiegogo, the first thing comes up is ours, and it's like black and like white text. But then there's another one with this woman who's trying to raise money for like her daughter's heart valve surgery, and I don't know why it says Focus. I didn't read it long enough, but I looked at it a little bit, and we've already got more money than they do. And I was like, I feel like that's not right. I feel like maybe the heart valve lady needs some money for a surgery.
So you should give your money to the heart valve people.
It's not going to happen.
Come on.
I mean, we need it.
Yeah. But that girl does not.
But not like a beating heart.
I mean, that feels kind of bad.
Yeah, I know, right? Not, like I said, not bad enough for me to do anything about it.
On the other hand, the short film Into Focus received 104% funding. So Which is the superior Focus movie? I don't know.
Well, how much were they going for?
$3,000.
Well, we're more than half that. So
that's quite a brag.
I know. So take that into Focus and Heart Lady. Although Heart Lady, best of luck. See, I'm back.
Oh boy.
Patrick, how are you doing?
Whoa, hey Chris. I don't know if you remember who the guy is who asks the questions around here is. It's the man with the deep sensual voice.
Who's that?
It's Penny, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Or was that Grandma?
No, it's Lucy.
Oh, there's Lucy.
Can you guys hear her down there?
Yeah.
Lucy.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about our cats.
Stop that, Lucy.
Lucy wants to know how Patrick's doing. Doesn't matter who asks the question.
Well, Patrick, Lucy would like to know. How are you today?
Doing good. Got a new sweatshirt in the mail. That's nice.
Where's that from?
Frank and Oak.
Frank and Oak, Montreal.
Yeah, Frank and Oak. I heard about them on the talk show, the like Mac Nerd podcast.
I've never heard of it.
And yeah, pretty nice, pretty warm. Nice. It's like a burgundy color.
They're listed as being stylish threads for men.
Mm. Sure, I'm very stylish, man.
Any relation to Oakenfort?
No, I don't know what that is, so maybe.
It's like a clothing company in Vancouver. That maybe
probably not.
They were related. What was the similar name?
I don't know. Anyway, good. Doing good. And obviously, Cameron, you're on the mend.
Yeah, I mean, there was no show last week because I had no voice at all. And It is currently 8:51 p.m. Pacific time. And, you know, my voice has been tested all day. I'm back at work. And so normally my voice sounded a bit more normal at the beginning of the day, but it's kind of fading out. But you know what? We can't go 2 weeks without What's the Deal.
No, our fans will abandon us. I'll go to Curbcast.
No, don't you say that. Don't you ever say that.
Don't bring up Curbcast. It's a sore subject.
You know, I think a much better idea would be for someone who's, you know, feeling on the edge, head over to whatsthedealshow.com, where you can check out the show notes for today's show. Maybe you'd like to donate to Chris's movie. Maybe you'd like to watch his short 5.5-minute promotional video. Well, the situation in North Korea is teetering on the brink. But Jerry Seinfeld, he's just worried about going to Coney Island. Patrick, why don't you take us into it?
So, yeah, the monologue. Jerry's talking about bumper cars. You know, all the different types of people on the bumper cars. There's the kid who's no good at it. There's the father and son team. The whole deal.
You ever do the bumper cars, Patrick?
I have never been on bumper cars, and I feel like it's too late because you go to the fair, everyone is under 14 on the bumper cars.
That's 13. How you dominate. It's like playing.
Know,
it's like playing soccer
against
10-year-olds.
I just feel like I'm never getting on those bumper cars now. It's too late.
No, it's never too late.
I remember that I've been in bumper cars, but I don't remember any sort of specific instances. Like, it's just one of those things where I'm pretty sure I've been in bumper cars, but they don't go anywhere. I never really saw the appeal as much. I wanted to go on a roller coaster.
Well, I was on a bumper car.
How'd you like
it? On the bumper cars?
I was that guy that was no good.
Oh, yeah. Did you ever have the operator helping you out?
I don't really remember that part. I just remember struggling to make it go forward because there was no pedals. You just kind of go forward on the one I was on. It operated on like a circuit. The little antenna would touch the roof and would complete the circuit, and it was electrical and it would move. So there was all sorts of like little sparks on the roof, but it meant you could stand on the floor because it wouldn't be a complete circuit. And I just couldn't go anywhere. I don't know if like the little antenna that was bent didn't touch the roof properly or what, but I just failed at it. And I was sitting there thinking, like, time's almost up. I gotta hit someone with this car. That's the whole thing. You just kind of want to cause carnage. And in your mind, it's going to be like when you're watching TV as a kid, and it's like, Sunday, 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 only at the Thunderdome. You're going to be that. You're going to be in Truckosaurus. And instead, I was an inept, like, 10-year-old, vainly spinning a steering wheel around, stuck in with a bunch of other bumper cars with nobody in it.
That sounds terrible. That happened to me at Disneyland on the teacups, where...
You hit someone with a teacup?
You don't steer the teacups.
No, but they wouldn't go. They just, like, wouldn't go.
Like, I don't understand, they wouldn't go. Like, the whole ride didn't go?
Like, everyone else's teacups went, and I'm in there with my mom, and because you've got that steering wheel in there, right?
Yeah,
and
to make
it spin it around, right?
Yeah, we wouldn't do anything. I'm in there, and everyone's spinning around, and we're like, spin harder, Mom! But you wouldn't do it.
You had a busted teacup.
I did.
I'm sorry.
Me too.
Are bumper cars still a thing? Are those still around?
Yeah, absolutely. Last time I was at a fair, there were bumper cars. And I really wanted to go on them.
You can still do it. It's not too late.
No, I can't. It's not okay.
Well,
why couldn't you still do it?
Because everyone is 13 and under.
So what?
I don't want to be the... Like, what fun is it to, like, be the only person who's really good at driving it and then crash into a 7-year-old and then they cry?
The most fun?
See, we have different...
conceptions of fun.
Yeah, we have different personalities. I would consider that having a bad time and being a mean person. But obviously you would enjoy it. Time.
I would.
I'm just going to go ahead here and tie break and say that it sounds awesome.
It's like Kramer, you know, in the karate. He's like, we're all at the same level, Jerry. It would just be me in the bumper cars with my Katya.
Well, when you get out of the bumper car, I don't want to see you here, here, or here.
So in the coffee shop, they're all hanging out. They're all going to different places. And Kramer is giving some directions to how to get to Coney Island on the subway. And we learned that George is going to a job interview. Elaine is going to a lesbian wedding. And Kramer is going to pay his parking tickets. Or just tickets in general.
He's got a lot of them.
$600 worth.
Kramer is very himself in this scene. Like, he looks like Kramer from any season right now.
Mm-hmm. And he's giving, like, the crazy directions, you know, and, you know, it turns out there's just one really simple way to do it. It's good.
Elaine's got someone to go to.
Yes.
Yeah. I already said that it was a lesbian wedding.
Oh, I missed that part. I was just waiting to get to the part with Kramer.
So Elaine's going to a lesbian wedding and, you know, George remarks that when he sees lesbian women, he feels like they're thinking that he's the reason that they're gay.
George is
which
real.
Is a little narcissistic.
He's got such a real inferiority complex. It is so bizarre. Like, he really views himself as just so, like, I guess it does feed his narcissism, but, like, at times, I know we've talked about this before, but sometimes George, like, views himself as, like, the shining Adonis of humanity. And then other times, mm-hmm. he just is filled with self-loathing and views himself as just gutter trash. And in this moment, that is him. When he is out there and, like, when I see lesbians and they see me, that's why they're the way they are. Like, it's so... It's just so central to George, right? Like, everything has to come back to him, which I guess is his egoism.
Tell the story about being on commercial drive with the two lesbians. I love this story. I tell people this story all the time, and it's your story.
about the t-shirts?
Yeah.
I will tell you the story. So, commercial drive, beautiful place in Vancouver, a progressive, liberal district. Is it a district? Would you call it a district or an area?
Neighborhood?
I call it an area.
An
I
area? Have their own neighborhood? A road?
A drive.
Yeah. And so I was out there, presumably because I love to bowl. And the commercial lanes was by there. You bowl a turkey on any game, you get a ticket for a free game. And they're licensed. They're our sponsor for today's episode. So anyhow, I was walking down there and I saw this girl who was wearing the same shirt as me. And I don't know about you guys, but I always kind of like double take when someone's wearing the same shirt as me. When, for whatever reason, actually, whenever it's a man, most of the time I look at it, I'm like, oh God, I hope I look better in that. Because there's just kind of like a moment when you just see like another guy wearing the same shirt as you. And it's just like, wow, I am just a dude. And I do kind of carry myself in probably that exact same way. I'm not Brad Pitt. I'm not Ryan Gosling like I thought. But
pretty sure I am though.
Yeah.
Dave Letterman's team.
I really wanted to use the Brad armpit joke there, but I guess I got to use it in the end. I cribbed that off Kenny versus Spenny.
Nice.
So anyhow, so this girl's wearing the same shirt as me. And as I was looking at her, I realized that she was also holding hands with another woman, which is not an uncommon thing on Commercial Drive, right? You know, this is, as I said, you know, it's a pretty progressive area and it's normal. But there was this moment where we made eye contact. And whenever you make eye contact with somebody, there's just that moment where you have to decide what you're going to do. It's like fight or flight. Am I going to hold this eye contact or am I going to look away? Now, me personally, every time this happens, I just feel awkward and I try to pretend that I was like looking past them and our eyes just met as I was turning my head, or I just look at my feet, immediately disengage, start playing with my phone, you name it. So I did this because I hold to my cowardly social values and that's what I decided to do. But she caught my eye and she kind of thought, I'm assuming, obviously, that I was looking at them in some sort of other manner, right? And so she came up to me and was like, what's the matter? You never seen two women hold hands before? And of course, I was like, no, I was just saying we're wearing the same shirt. And that's that whole story.
Wait, what happened after you said you were wearing the same shirt?
I mean, I could tell you an amazing tale right now about how her girlfriend realized it and was excited and very enthusiastic about us wearing the same shirts, and how she felt slightly sheepish after that, and, you know, it all worked out.
I always put that part in the story.
Do you?
When I tell it.
When you tell the story?
Yeah. Your story.
So what actually happened?
What actually happened? I don't really remember what happened after that. I'm assuming what happened, and I can say this with almost 100% certainty, she probably rebuffed that suggestion and continued about her day.
Oh, I didn't even realize that I might be making up the other part. I'm going to keep telling it that way, though.
It is a better story that way.
I can't believe you're such a pig, Cameron.
I mean, we were wearing the same shirt.
Okay. Well,
So Seinfeld.
Yeah, so basically, they're all taking the subway. The scene sets the scene, and they're all going to different places. Jerry really wants someone to go with him to Coney Island because he has to go pick up his car, and he's going to, you know, eat a hot dog, ride the roller coaster, whole thing. Yeah. Next scene, they're all on the subway. I guess they're going to like a central station where they can change trains. And yeah, we see Kramer's tickets. It's a lot of tickets.
It is. I feel like it's more than $600. Oh, maybe it's inflation.
Well, I mean, one of them is...
Oh, here we go.
He has no doors on his car.
That was the part that struck me more than anything, is that they're the weirdest tickets possible. Like,
I like that no doors is a specific ticket.
Well, no doors in public.
I do like how often Kramer's been caught doing all of these things, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah. I feel like people get away with these minor infractions all the time, but Kramer must just have, like, flashing lights on the top of his vehicle.
I just imagine that he, in general, drives in a crazy way and attracts a lot of attention.
I can see that. There is that episode where he parks his car by smashing it back and forth in between two other cars.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess the reason the reason Jerry's going to Coney Island is that they found his stolen car.
Yeah, and it's in better condition than it was before.
Yeah, is that just a joke? Is that real? I couldn't tell. Like, it was obviously a joke in the context of the show, but like in the Seinfeld universe, did that actually happen? Is Jerry just being funny? I can't tell.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, actually. Because
he does tell jokes.
Well, and there's a later episode where a man who's infatuated with his car steals it and wants to take very good care of it. So I actually got confused for a moment thinking, oh, that makes sense because the guy loves his car. But it's not that guy. It was Larry David.
Oh, crap. Roger Ebert died.
Yes, Chris.
Well, that's sad. I really liked Roger Ebert.
We all did.
Are you really just getting this news now, or is this just stilted for what's...
Well, it happened today. Oh, it happened yesterday.
It happened today.
Happened today. So, yeah, I just got it.
Oh. Well, I'm sorry to... I'm sorry that you just received this news live on air, but it is true. And it is unfortunate. He had an amazing career.
Yeah, I was a big fan. I was the only kid in my class that used to really like Siskel and Ebert. But then Gene Siskel died too. And I was also the only kid that cared. I was 10.
Our show is the best.
Well... what's the word I'm looking for? when someone dies. Console. Hell.
Inconsolable?
No. Good.
Grieving?
No. But what's the thing that you give? Like,
a eulogy?
No. Look, when you say, well, congratulations. There we go. My condolences. There we go. My condolences to Roger Ebert's wife.
Chaz Ebert.
Chaz. Yeah. Okay.
I bet people are glad that we're back on the air.
On Seinfeld, yeah.
And it turned out they were wearing the same shirt.
Okay, yeah, so, you know, we find out about Jerry's car, and Jerry can't convince anyone to go with him to Coney Island, and they split up. And from here until the very end of the episode, they're all totally split up, and we have the four stories running in parallel, which is pretty cool. I like it. I can't remember. They've done this a couple times before where they start running stories in parallel, but I think this is the first time where all four characters each have their own story. It's nice. It's like little vignettes.
And once again, or rather, I think this proves a point the camera made a long time ago on the show, that we see everybody have their own little inner monologues, but never Kramer.
There's nothing going on up there.
No. Just gambling addiction and no doors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the next scene, we see everyone get onto their train. You know, they all get on, and Kramer has a pretty good scene. He does some physical comedy where he's trying to get a seat. And I don't understand why he keeps faltering, but he keeps sort of tripping over himself and missing the seats. And they fill up right before he wants to sit down. And eventually he tries to, like, cram into right next to this really huge guy who there's no room to sit next to.
I like pretty how good. Even the extras in this scene couldn't keep a straight face while this was going on. They're mm-hmm. all kind of like cracking smiles, especially when he's trying to jam in next to the big guy.
It's pretty funny.
It's good. You know, Michael Richards, it's kind of his wheelhouse. So anytime that he has an opportunity to kind of like flip around and just kind of act like generally a crazy, tall, gangly man, works really well.
Yeah, he's got that down.
They also kind of do a good job setting up each of their little scenes, like with cutting to whoever the character is that they're going to be interacting with. Well, I guess this is mostly Jerry and George. So with Jerry, they cut to this big guy sitting across from him. And with George, they cut to this like attractive woman sort of sitting right next to him. And so right away, we see Jerry fall asleep on the train.
Have you guys ever had people do this to you? Because I've had this happen on the SkyTrain where the person next to me would fall asleep and kind of put their head on my shoulder, and it felt awful. I felt like my personal space was completely violated.
Why didn't you just wake them up?
Well, you know, you kind of like nudge them, but eventually when you're like, hey, excuse me, hey. And then they kind of wake up and they're confused about where they are, and they kind of like grunt, and then they put their head to the other side, and then now they're like kind of like pushing like their hip into you or something. I mean, you have to wake them up, but it's no good.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I will always just sort of shake someone and say, sorry, you fell asleep on me. But then you're right that they do sort of slump over to the other side. And then they're sort of sticking their butt into you. And yeah. It's a lot harder to complain that, like, their butt is pushing into you.
Well, and then, honestly, like, you know, they're trying to, like, push into the seat like it's a mattress, like it's their bed. And inevitably mm-hmm. what they do is they're literally, like, pushing, like their hips and, like, their ass, like, into you with force. And it is definitely unpleasant. And it's not like at that point you can kind of, like, elbow their ass or something, right? Because they're not on you.
Maybe you can just be passive aggressive, and I don't really know what you can do. Just poke them. Just give them a little jab once in a while. Push their foot. Put little specks of paper on them.
Why the paper?
Put a sign on them that says, you know, kick me. A little sign would be good.
I fall asleep on people.
Spill a little coffee on them.
Scalding hot.
No, or just like a little sign that give them a little like stain. I have.
A little stain.
Now
I sound kind of like a sociopath here.
I don't know. I was thinking you could put a little sign things. On them says that I said like I have HIV or whatever. Like just a sign to mess with their day. You know.
What do you think is happening then? Like other people are gonna think they.
I'm not gonna have sex with them then. Okay. Their wife's gonna be mad. She's gonna think that he's cheating on her, but really he just fell asleep on Cameron.
You're so, right, it's a brilliant plan.
I know.
I have, this time, guaranteed, a good story for you.
Okay.
So, it is about riding the SkyTrain, which is Vancouver's sort of elevated rail and also sometimes subway. So, I used to work right downtown, like right at Waterfront. So, for those of you who are not familiar with Vancouver, this is just, as it sounds, like the sort of district that's like right on the edge of the water. And it was for a long time, the last stop. So you'd always ride it. And it was, I worked late. And so I'd always get kind of like odd people getting on there from downtown to like head back out into the suburbs. And you're often kind of confronted with these strange people on the subway. And you just kind of have to do your best to kind of deal with it. And my way to deal with it was to try and always be listening to music it's an amazing way to just show people that you have a complete disinterest in anything that they might be bringing to the table. And this one guy was absolutely insistent that I pay attention to him. So, you know, he like tapped my legs like, hey, man, you're like, what are you listening to? And I think at the time I was listening to the most recent Ween album. And I was like, oh, I'm listening to Ween. And then, you know, I like put my headphone back on to immediately try and show him I don't care. And he's like, you know, he taps me. I was like, oh, that's awesome. I'm listening to, I don't even remember what. I'm listening to Pearl Jam. Hey, can I check it out? Can I listen to it? Do you want to swap CDs? I was like, no, that's okay. I kind of want to listen to it. He's like, oh, I see. No, it's cool. I understand. Like, you never really know about people on here, right? And I was like, no, it's just that my stop's coming up soon. And it wasn't. My stop was not coming up anytime soon. So now I was kind of hoping that this guy was getting off very soon. And he continued to just talk to me. And he's like telling me about how he really wanted to be a vet and how much he really dug music and the stars. And a point just came.
Like the worst person ever.
A point came where I'm like,
watch this guy.
I cannot handle this anymore. But I don't know what to do. And I decided, I'm just going to, at the next stop, get up and get off the train, and I will just wait for the next train to come, and I'll just leave this guy. So I get up, and I start going to the door, and he gets up, and he says, oh, are you going? I was like, yeah, I'm getting off. And he's like, oh, that's awesome. This is my stop, too. So now I'm thinking, great. I can't get out and just like stay on the station. I'll walk to the next station. I'll just lose this guy and walk to the next station. And he just continued to try and befriend me and become like my closest confidant. And he thought that we were really making this connection. And he just follows me. He's walking with me to the next stop, which is like miles away. And at some point, he stops me, right? He takes both of his hands, puts them on my shoulders, and looks at me straight in the face like, hey, man, I just want to let you know that I really respect you.
I would punch this guy in the face. If that guy put his freaking hands on me, I would punch that guy in the face.
And I didn't know what to do. I was like, oh, thanks. Yeah, I respect you too. And he's like, no, like, I really respect you. And it's like, okay, that's fine. He's like, okay, listen, I've got to go, but listen, if you wanted to like do some robberies or something sometime, I would have your back.
Shut up.
I'm not even kidding. I'm not joking slightly. And then he just left, and then he was just gone. So
did
I made
literally say do some robberies or something.
Do some robberies. Those are his exact words. And then he left. And I can't believe, Chris, I've told you this story before. Something? No, that's the thing. So like afterwards,
I coordinate on your robberies.
Afterwards, I realized I was at the next station. I was like freaked out. I'm like, oh my God, what if this guy like shows up? He's like, okay. He like hands me like a crowbar and a balaclava. I was like, oh, he didn't give me the contact info. He didn't think about it. Like I'm safe. And then, but literally for weeks afterwards, I was worried I was going to see him on the SkyTrain, and that was going to be the situation. Like he was going to be dressed all in black, have like a backpack that was rattling with metal in it, and just be like, okay, man, so tonight's the night, right? Like, this is a true story. I've definitely told, I feel like I've told you both this story before.
I never heard this story.
You've heard this story.
I may have heard
it story. Must have been a long time ago then.
Well, it was. I mean, so when would this would have been? Like,
wait, where is he going to show up, though? How is he going to know where you live?
No, I was worried that he was going to show up, like, at, like, the SkyTrain. Like, I was going to see him at the SkyTrain.
He's just going to wait for you with his crowbar?
Like a crime version. Wait a few old day, man.
We've got to do these robberies. TD down the street.
I mean, I was in some way proud that some random guy thought I was cool enough that he was willing to do like a robbery or something, you know, that he'd have my back for something like that. But it did really freak me out about riding the SkyTrain for a really long time.
Yeah.
And it turns out we were wearing the same shirt.
I've had lots of weird experiences with the SkyTrain, like lots and lots and lots. I won't even go into the really weird ones. I'll just tell a very brief one that is similar to your listening to music story, in that it's very brief, and this is just very odd, in that I'm on the subway, I'm on the SkyTrain going to work, and everybody's like jammed in. I'm like crammed in by someone, and I'm listening to, at the time was not the most recent one, but the last M83 record, and I'm listening to it, and then the song ends, and then just as the song ends, I can still hear the track playing, and I'm like, what? That's weird. And so I take out my phone. I'm like, no, it's going to the next track. And then I realize that the guy right next to me is listening to the exact same thing at the same time. And his headphones are just loud enough for me to hear when my song had paused between tracks. And I'm like, are you listening to the new M83 record? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, me too. And he's like, cool, man. That's a hot album. I was like, yeah. Did you guys want to do some robberies or something sometime?
And you were wearing the same t-shirt.
Yeah. I do distinctly remember him saying, yeah, that's a hot album. But that was my strange music, not robbery story.
That story's okay, but I mean, if he didn't respect you or want to do robberies, you lost my interest.
Well, my story about the kids and the Body Worlds thing is good, but that's for another time, I think.
So George's story, he's on the train and there's this woman who's kind of making eyes with him, and eventually she starts a little flirting, and we see more evidence that George is a prude. Like, he laughs nervously and flatteredly, and you know, she asks if he's looking for a job. He says no, looking for the stock section, and he does a pretty good job of faking that he's a stockbroker.
Does he?
It's pretty good. She believes it.
I mean, if you know nothing about the stock market at all, I guess he could fake his way through that.
He's in all the big market, Cameron.
All the big boards. You name him, I'm there.
Well, I guess I don't know that he's doing a good job. It's just that when George is lying, he's a very charming faker. He's got some sort of like swagger, some sort of confidence about him that's kind of infectious.
He's got swagger, all right.
Like he's Jagger. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It works though. She's into him.
Well, I mean, she or wants to rob him, so
yeah, it works.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I don't think it works so much as, like, I don't think she necessarily believes. I don't know. Do you think
she wouldn't, if she thought he were unemployed, she wouldn't bother trying to rob him for his $8?
Maybe.
Yeah, because this has like got to be like a couple hours worth of work. So, you know, what's that, $4 an hour to rob him? Not a good return.
Her whole morning. Yeah, and so then we see Elaine on the train, and she's stuck with this woman who won't stop talking to her. And, you know, Elaine seems annoyed at first, but then, you know, just kind of gets used to it. But the thing is, this woman does not know what ironic means.
That was pretty funny. I like that part.
It's really strange. But I got to ask you, how old is this woman supposed to be? Because she says, I started riding these trains in the 40s.
I guess she's...
So is she talking about, like...
60s? In her 60s?
Does she mean, like, she got on there that, like, as soon as she was born, basically? When she was 10?
I mean, she... Maybe she's
you gotta
10,
get home from the hospital somehow. Yeah.
There's no room in the cab, Mildred. Let the baby take the subway.
Gotta learn. You know, it's New York. Gotta be tough. I must say, this episode... For a show that's shot entirely in L.A., this episode feels extremely authentically New York. More so than you know, just the scenes with, like, you know, the markets or some of the restaurants. This episode feels very New York to me. Mostly I think it's the characters, like the gamblers that Kramer meets and everything. It's very, very good casting and set decoration this episode.
Well, they do a really good job with the set because, I mean, they use the exact same subway car for every single scene in this episode. They have one car.
Do they?
Yeah.
I thought they were doing different ones.
They do a good job of changing out the graffiti on the subway map. Did you notice that?
Yeah, and that's what they did. They just had the crew go back and change like all the decorations, right? So they'd pull out the posters, change the graffiti, and then they just, you know, have people stand outside and rock the subway or rock the car around to make it look like it was working.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it's clever.
And this woman is talking to Elaine. She's offended that Elaine's going to a lesbian wedding. It's I don't know what to say about it. I guess that Elaine, the point of the scene is that Elaine is progressive and
this woman is a huge prude.
I guess. I mean,
she reminded me of the Karate Kid's mom, but not quite.
Although, you know, this is what is troubling sometimes with Seinfeld. You know, Elaine's being a very reasonable, progressive person here, and at the end, she has that line where she's like, "You don't understand, I'm not a lesbian," and it goes into a good joke, but I mean, if she's so progressive-minded,
why is she so concerned?
Yeah, why would she care if this woman might think that she's a lesbian?
Well, maybe that's the joke, is that Elaine feels very progressive, but, you know, at the same time doesn't want to be, you know, she has you know, misgivings about being labeled, you know?
Oh, perhaps.
Like,
she's not super progressive.
It happens later on in the episode too, but I'll save it for that.
But that line at the end is actually very funny, despite maybe coming off as slightly homophobic. I love her line about "I hate men, but I'm not a lesbian."
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And then the way she like smiles at that guy afterwards and just kind of gives him like a nod to some dude on the side. Pretty good. Pretty good.
And then, so there's another scene with Kramer just hanging out, and he sort of has like a little like a standoff with what seems like a Ukrainian peasant man or something.
What?
He's got like,
he just
this
looks
guy,
like he just looks like a hipster.
I don't know. He's like kind of unshaven. He's got this dirty hat on.
He looks like a hipster.
And then Elaine gets stuck on the train. Her train stops. And
she
we start
she
hearing
loses
Elaine's
her crap. Lot.
Yeah, it's gradual. Right at the beginning, she's just a little anxious and irritated. And like soon it progresses to her being just furious and angry.
Yeah, I mean, when the train initially stops, she doesn't seem as concerned. But boy, when we cut back to her later, like she's losing it when she compares herself as to someone, or when she like starts trying to think about like concentration camps and hostages, you can tell that Elaine's starting to go off the rails a little bit. Maybe she's claustrophobic.
Yeah, a little. She keeps complaining about something touching her leg.
Did you guys notice that Peter Melman is in this scene?
No.
No.
He's the guy that she looks at and says, "This guy really smells." And I think it's pretty cool how often in Seinfeld they get the writers into episodes as like small part extras.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Who's
this Gellman guy?
He's one of the writers on Seinfeld.
Yeah, I liked Larry Charles in that earlier episode. That was good.
He was good. And then later, I can't remember what his name is, but one of the writers is the guy who invites Golf or George to play Frolf.
Oh, yeah. yeah, and of course, Larry David. He's in that all the time. Yeah, and so eventually we see the who we learn is like a lady grifter convinced George to go with him, and he misses his job interview. And then Kramer gets a hot horse tip. It's a lock.
Oh, it's a lock.
It's something.
He's a mutter.
I really love these. I love the two guys who they're talking about how it's this UPS guy or something has this tip, and they just both look like guys who are really into horse racing.
Oh yeah,
and gambling. They're great.
Like, so this is very authentically New York feeling, at least my like fictional conception of what New York should be from television.
Like if you were living in a Woody Allen movie or something.
That's right. I mean, to an extent, I feel like I try to do that.
What do you guys know about horse racing?
Very
They're low. Horses and they race.
You bet on them.
You do.
Why is it that he says not to tell anybody? If too many people bet on it, does it change the odds on a horse?
I
don't know. I don't know if the bookie is allowed to change the odds while people are betting on it.
See, that was my thought. I feel like once you've placed your bet at odds, everybody has to have the same odds at the bet.
But maybe not. I mean, maybe it's the bookie's choice.
So something you put in that was like a lock is suddenly like 30 to 1 or something?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know enough about horse racing. I got to go to the track.
Yeah, let's go bet on some ponies.
Mm-hmm. But I really like the thing where when the guy says, you know, it's been rainy, it's going to be slow. And the guy says, like, oh, his father was a mutter. And his mutter was a mutter. I think those
his
lines
mutter was a mutter?
You heard him. Yeah, it's pretty good.
I love how they reuse that dialogue later as well. And Kramer's trying to affect being that like that same guy, with that same confidence.
Yeah, it's funny though, because do you think that Kramer is just a problem gambler who isn't that good at gambling?
Yes.
And so he doesn't have that much confidence?
Yes. No, okay.
So he's just trying to seem confident?
He's perpetually broke, and the only thing we've ever seen him do is I guess we shouldn't say always, but we almost always see him lose when he gambles.
Yeah. And so Jerry wakes up to the man who kept eyeing him as he was sleeping. And now there's no one else around on that side of the car. And he's in the nude. With his briefcase strategically placed.
To cover his ankles.
Yeah. Were you surprised at how many fat jokes...
That's what I was going to say. I wish they hadn't just... I don't know why the, like, naked guy... That could be weird enough. I feel like that's there's lots of comedic material there. I don't know why they had to become fat jokes.
Yeah, I mean, why is Jerry so mean to this person? I mean...
Well, he's naked. He should be ashamed.
I get that Jerry is... Oh, can you hear those sirens?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'll just close my window here. Did that do anything?
Yeah, much better.
I mean,
maybe
much better.
This one away.
Well, which one is it?
It sounds fine.
It's fine, but I think the sirens just have gone now.
No, yeah. They're just getting louder.
I bet they are.
I don't hear it at
okay.
all.
But yeah, why does Jerry need to be so cruel to this guy? I mean, I understand that waking up and having a naked person that you don't know and, you know, I guess you've decided it's not a pleasant surprise for you, would be off-putting. But why, once Jerry has his wits about him, does he just very casually continue to insult this man?
I don't know, over and over.
He does.
You know, the guy's like, you know, you have something against the naked form. He's like, I have something against yours. Because you're a disgusting fat man.
Maybe it's just because he was disillusioned after having met Timon and/or Pumbaa.
Wow, that's gone straight over my head.
He was Timon or Pumbaa. I forget which one, but he's... He's one of them.
Pumbaa.
This is the fat one.
That guy?
That's Pumbaa, yeah.
Wow. That's a deep cut.
I'm full of useless knowledge.
Hakuna Matata.
I don't know. I don't get it. I don't like it. Like, the fat jokes aren't even really funny.
No, he's just like, literally being offensive to this man.
Yeah.
But then they make friends over baseball or something.
Yeah, so
I guess it's fine. I don't know.
Yeah, so some other stuff happens. I guess we can finish talking about this scene with the guy.
That's Nathan Lane?
Yeah.
What?
He lost a lot of weight.
Did he?
Yeah.
All right.
Nathan Lane, he weighs like 160 now or something.
Are you sure you're not thinking of Timon?
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of Timon.
Oh, yeah. Because it doesn't even look like Nathan Lane.
All right, who the hell are Timon? It's one of them. I know it.
Who played Pumbaa?
Yeah, you're right. It is Pumbaa. Oh.
Yeah.
He played the naked man.
But then, you know, eventually they get past the fat jokes and they're talking about baseball, you know, and eventually Jerry says if they win the pennant this year, presumably the Mets, I guess at this point, Jerry's still a Mets fan, or is he always a Mets fan?
No, he's a Yankees fan.
Well, he wears Mets hats sometimes.
I know, but it's
okay. Well,
doesn't matter.
Anyway, he says if they win the pennant, Jerry will sit naked with him at the World Series. And then they bond, and naked guy winks at him. And so at the same time, Elaine is totally panicking on her train. You know, eventually, you know, at the peak of her panic, the lights go out, and it's even worse.
Yeah, she doesn't deal with it well.
I'm still kind of surprised that there was censored swearing in the scene. I don't remember there being swearing in the scene at all. Like, do you guys remember that at all? In my mind,
I remember
the
it.
Only episode that has that is the non-fat one. Yogurt.
Yeah.
I feel like if anyone's going to be censored swearing, it's Elaine.
This guy really has just made a career of being Pumbaa. I mean, you've done some other stuff, but, like, you check it out. It's a lot of Pumbaa.
He's in the Kingdom Hearts games. Because, you know, once you're in that Disney wheel, you're the guy.
Cash cow.
Cash Warthog.
I was going to do it, but then I didn't.
Cash Warthog?
Yeah.
So, moving along, George, he's in the hotel room. With this woman, and she tells him to get naked. George has a mild panic attack when
she doesn't say to get naked. She says get comfortable.
Oh yeah. She suggests he get comfortable, and he has a panic attack that he doesn't know what that means. So he takes off his shoes. She comes back, you know, partially unclothed, and George insists he's quite comfortable,
which is a great line.
Yeah, and. Yeah, and then there's a cut to...
Well, I gotta ask you guys.
Sure.
You're in that situation, you know, maybe not that exact situation, but you're with somebody. It's the first time, you know, there's obviously a bit of an attraction. If they say, make yourself comfortable, what do you do?
I go one step further than George and I take the jacket off.
Hmm. Keep the tie on?
Only the tie.
Maybe. But really? I would take my pants off, then take my underwear off, then put my pants back on. So I'd be like commando.
You got a really specific protocol here, Chris.
Where would you put your underwear afterwards?
I'd hide it.
Under the pillow?
Yeah, maybe under the pillow.
You should just put it
there, though.
You should put it into your pant pocket. Tuck it into your shoe.
Because I'm wearing those. And then when she's going through my pockets later to rob me, she's like, what the hell? I'm like, I don't want him to be comfortable.
Patrick, what would you do?
irrefutable logic.
I mean, probably, I would actually probably maybe take off the jacket and tie, but probably not. Probably just the shoes.
I mean, I would definitely take off my shoes. Jacket. Maybe the tie.
Tie would take too much effort, though. It's hard to take off a tie really quickly.
No.
What?
I wouldn't want to be, like, in the middle of taking off my tie when she came back out in her lingerie. And I'd be like, I'm just getting comfortable.
Give me a minute.
Give me a minute.
I don't know about you, but I would say...
It would have taken me a while to get out of my underwear.
I would say the amount of time it takes to take a tie off is about 4 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Same as taking off your shoes. Maybe less.
I mean, it's less effort because you don't even have to bend. You just literally pull and you're done.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't think George is doing anything wrong here. I think it's just his panicking that is funny.
Yeah, because I'm with you guys. I don't think in any world make yourself comfortable is the code word for be naked when I come back
out. Get naked?
Mm-hmm.
It is. No, it totally is in certain situations.
I mean, if she was already in her, like, negligee, if she was already in her lingerie, in her fineries, and she said that, then you know what? I think it's clear. You can strip down a bit. But when she's wearing a suit or a women's suit, like just a jacket and skirt, I don't know. What was she wearing? Jacket and a skirt?
She's wearing like a pantsuit.
Pantsuit. Okay. So when someone's wearing their like power lunch clothes and they say, make yourself comfortable, you don't get undressed.
No. I mean, maybe if you're a lady, but if you're a dude, you have a real risk of coming off like that dude that Elaine later dates who pulls it out while they're in the car. You know?
Are you talking about his tie?
Yeah.
4 seconds.
Yeah. But you know,
he was just trying to get his underwear off.
So in the next, we see it cut to a few minutes later where George is all but undressed. I think he has his socks and his underwear on and he's letting this woman cuff him to the bed.
I feel like that's a red flag.
Yeah, well, George just does the weirdest thing ever in that he talks about how his mom always walked around in a bra and panties.
Why is he telling this story?
I don't know.
I don't get it at all. What is his goal here?
He's just so nervous, I guess. I guess he is cuffed, you know.
I don't think that's a valid reason.
To be nervous?
To start to talking about your
None
mom
of it makes
wearing
any sense.
It's very
yeah,
strange.
It's really weird. Yeah, I don't know.
Some issues.
So then, yeah, this woman, she comes back out fully clothed, says she's robbing, you know, Mr. Rich Guy George, finds $8 in his suit, and is so irritated, she takes his suit.
She does. But then we come back.
It's worth $350.
I kind of feel like George, as much as anyone deserves to be robbed, he deserves to have his suit taken for misleading this woman about his suitability
as a person to rob.
No.
Patrick, we're getting into some dark territory here. What are you talking about?
He's lying about being
You're
a millionaire
literally saying
to this
he
woman.
He was asking for it based on what he was wearing.
No, no. I'm saying that he deserves to be like...
I got it, Patrick.
You're a monster.
I'm just saying there's...
I might have the monster's
like,
voice, sure, but it. You have his spirit.
Yeah.
So,
right, Patrick?
So this woman... She robs him, takes his suit, and George is trapped. I don't know how he got out of the cuffs.
House cleaning?
Yeah, I guess. But are they coming in that time of the day?
Maybe he was just shouting for help.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Okay. And so then we see Kramer's story. He's at off-track betting. He's got this tip. He bets his $600 that he needs to pay for his tickets. He's pretty excited.
Now, I like his partner in this scene. And Michael Richards is on the record as saying that, you know, he didn't like feeling pigeonholed, like he always had to have somebody else there, like Newman or Mickey or something like that. But I think in many ways, Michael Richards is almost always best when he's got somebody to play off like this, because he, I don't know, it's like he feeds off it, right? It's just like he's like throwing a ball against a wall and it comes back to him and he can just kind of like keep going with it. It's, I don't know, I always think it works really well.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, so this Kramer bets on this race and it doesn't seem to be going well. Kramer thinks, you know, his betting luck is continuing. He's distraught. And the horse comes from behind. And Kramer does this crazy thing where he acts like the jockey.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, and like he's riding the horse and like he's riding this horse to victory. He's pretty excited.
It all works out.
Yeah, he wins. He wins big. And, you know, he collects his winnings. And the scary guy eyes him as he's holding his, like, hundreds of dollars in front of him. I guess it was a long shot. Like, I think he said 30 to 1.
Looked like a lot of money.
Yeah, he said 30 to 1 and he bet $600. That's a lot of money. It's thousands of dollars. What is
that? Yeah, it's like, I can't do that ads. I can't do the math.
30 times 600, it's like...
It's almost $20,000, isn't it?
Yeah, $18,000.
God, that's how he's...
Well, what can he do? He's got the cash.
Yeah.
And this guy, you know, he sees this big win and follows Kramer onto the train.
Oh, man. This is like a scene out of a nightmare where someone's just kind of following you and everything's getting in your way.
Yeah. Because it's Meatloaf.
It actually kind of reminded me of a scene like from like the Terminator, just because this guy is totally silent, totally relentless. It's pretty good. And so eventually, you know, as Kramer's running from this guy. Oh, we didn't even mention this earlier. There was this fiddler, this blind fiddler on the train trying to make money. And just as this guy asks for Kramer's money, we discover that the blind fiddler is actually a cop and arrests him. It's pretty good. It's a very tense scene. It's a pretty good action scene for the sitcom.
It is, and I was glad they ended it that way because I was worried. Like, it seemed like they were setting it up for, like, oh, he wins the money, but then he loses it. And it seemed like they were setting it up in the same way, like, you know, with the statue where they go through all the hassle of getting the statue, but then they break it in the end. It would have just sucked if Kramer lost all this money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't really like the applause for the police officer, though, for whatever reason.
Yeah, I never liked the applause in Seinfeld.
I don't mind it if it's for, like, a riotous joke and there's, like, laughter and applause. But when people are just kind of clapping happy, I'm not into it.
Do you think this scene was even filmed in front of an audience? On the subway car?
I don't know. It was on a set. But I feel like it would maybe be a little much to have that in front of a live audience.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I was okay with the clapping.
Yeah, so, you know, eventually we come back to the coffee shop. They're all hanging out except for George, who comes in dressed in the bed sheet. I don't know why the hotel let him take it. Or didn't give him, like, some clothes. But he's there in the sheet asking for his spare keys. And this guy yells at him that he's a Hare Krishna. Which is weird, because if George actually were a Hare Krishna, you don't just, like, yell that at people. Like, if you see a Hare Krishna at the airport, you're not just like, Hare Krishna.
You ignore them.
Yeah, you don't want to take their pamphlet.
No.
Well, maybe he's...
Plus, George isn't the right kind of, he's not the right kind of bald.
Maybe he's a fellow.
Do you think this guy's
fellow.
Just making fun of him?
Maybe he's a fellow.
I don't know, but George is not having it.
I love George's line here about, like, shoving his Hare Krishna down his throat.
Yeah. It's pretty violent for George. Pretty good.
I mean,
stuff your stories in a sock.
He's upset.
Yeah, and Elaine missed the wedding because of this train. And she's consoled that she'll at least get to go to the Briss. I guess because they're having a child. And yeah, that's kind of it. Jerry, for some reason in this episode, they keep insisting that Jerry get the bill, which has not been a thing up until this point. But then we see Kramer pay with his big winnings.
It's pretty fun to watch Kramer throw some cash down on the table.
Yeah, he loves it. He's the exact opposite of George. Like, he seems so happy to just throw the cash down, whereas George just wants the praise for seeming generous.
Yeah. I agree.
I kind of wish that George could have been there to watch Kramer throw the money down. Because I felt like he would have had a great reaction to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's it. There's kind of a... I couldn't even take any notes about the closing monologue because it was kind of incomprehensible to me.
It's just not very funny.
Yeah.
Episode as a whole, what do you think, Patrick?
I thought it was pretty funny. I really enjoyed, you know, Kramer's antics. I thought Kramer's story was the most entertaining one. Oh, we actually totally missed one point.
Oh, yeah.
Jerry ended up going with this guy, the naked man, now clothed, to Coney Island.
Oh, well, and we also missed Elaine's end of the story.
Yeah.
That the cars come back to life, but only for a moment, and there she is still stuck.
Yeah.
That's not a good one for Elaine.
No, yeah. So anyway, overall...
Kramer makes some money and Jerry makes a friend, but the other two, no good.
Yeah. George loses it all. His suit and his $8.
Poor guy.
But overall, I thought it was good. I liked the four stories. I thought that was interesting and hadn't seen that before in Seinfeld. It was good.
How about you, Christopher?
I enjoyed it. It was good. Parts of it I thought were pretty good. Parts of it I thought were pretty boring.
What did you think was boring?
I thought, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I guess no, it was particularly boring.
It just didn't always just feel inspired, you know. There's just...
Yeah, I just felt like they're kind of going through the motions. It's like, oh, Elaine's talking to someone. I bet she's going to be offended by a lesbian wedding. Yeah, she is. And then, oh, her train stopped. Yeah, I was bored by Elaine's storyline. Let's just say that.
Yeah, right. I'm of a similar mindset. The episode, it's okay. It's funny. But...
I did really like the seriously New York color that they put into this episode. I thought it was really great.
I just feel that episodes when the whole cast is separated for that long are just not as entertaining for me because there's just too much stuff going on with everybody else's little stories to really develop one really strong central plot. And you end up with just kind of like little vignettes that are kind of funny and maybe like an interesting window on their days as their various personalities. But you know, you need those little meetings back at Jerry's apartment, I think. And
I agree. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so with the episode covered, it is time to listen to my sensual voice as I direct you to whatsthedealshow.com, where you can check out today's show notes and as well today's topic for other business, the part of the show where we dissect and discuss the weird and the esoteric news of the day or of the week before or several weeks before. Today, we have a little bit of interesting news. If you live in the greater Boston area and you don't want to spend too much on a meal, well, there's a new place opening up. It's called The Gleaner's Kitchen. It's an underground restaurant, which are growing in popularity. And there's a special catch. It's not just that it's an underground restaurant using bizarre and interesting ingredients. No, no. Maximus Thaler, the proprietor, gleans all of this food straight out of dumpsters. And he prepares meals for anyone that wants to come by. And, yeah, and they just enjoy a wide assortment of different foods. And every part of the meal comes from food which had been discarded by someone or some company. And he says that the things that they find are jaw-dropping, noting that one night's haul can easily be worth thousands of dollars. Now, the meals, they're served at 6, but all day you can come by for coffee, tea, and warm lentil soup. What do you guys think?
This is a bad idea. I think it's a terrible idea.
So
you're eating out of dumpsters. It's not a good idea.
So is this guy charging for these meals?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. So it's not, in his words, a place of commerce where you pay something to get something. So they're trying to foster a community. And so what they ask for is that people simply show their gratitude for the meals that they receive, and that they bring something back to the kitchen. Something that they feel is equivalent to the value of what is received. So a service of some sort, a gift, a monetary donation, maybe other food that you've found in a dumpster.
So... God's
sakes.
What do you think, Patrick?
Well, what are you asking me? Are you asking me if I would go eat?
Well, number one, what do you just think of the idea in general?
I mean, it's fine. I don't really care. I mean, I guess the reason, I mean, I'm more like vaguely concerned that, you know, he won't recognize that, like, the reason some food was thrown out. I'm assuming he's pretty good at dumpster diving and knows what he's doing. So it seems like that hasn't happened yet.
That's an assumption I'm not willing to make.
But
you're meeting him more than halfway, eh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think overall it's fine if he wants to do this. I think if people are going to eat at this place, they know what they're getting into.
So my question is for you now, would you eat there?
Do you think the food is good?
Well, he's got some pictures, so go ahead and take a look at the pictures. You tell me. He's Instagrammed them, so there's some nice color photos.
Of course he has.
It mostly looks like raw food.
It does. It just kind of looks like produce.
You know, I feel like if you're serving dumpster food, you should cook it. At the very least. Yeah, damn hippie.
Chris, would you eat this food?
No.
Would you eat anything that came out of a dumpster?
No.
What if it was in a bag?
What? No.
Like a bag of Tostitos.
No.
So in the garbage is garbage.
In the garbage is garbage. Most definitely.
I think I'm mostly seeing fritters and salads. So the food itself does not look super exciting to me.
Mm-hmm. That's your concern? That he's not a creative dumpster chef?
Well, if he was, if the food was really good, I would take the risk, you know? If
really?
It was like, if he was a super good chef and they were making super delicious food, I would definitely go. But if it's just kind of like standard, like vegan fare,
standard vegan fare,
overcooked brown rice
is from not a dumpster.
You know, overcooked brown rice and, you know, raw vegetables. You know, I'll give it a pass. But you know, if the food was good, I would definitely go.
Creative trash.
Cameron, what about you?
Absolutely not. I not only do I think it's a bad idea, but I'm not sure how much you'd have to pay me to even eat something that this man prepared. The idea of eating something out of the garbage, and I know someone who would be a self-professed freegan would disagree with this, but
you know, so oh, I see.
I cannot bring myself to eat food out of the dumpster. All right. I mean, it would be different. It would be completely different if when the store was closing and they're like, okay, these are the things they're going to throw away. They put them in a plastic bag and the guy took them. But you throw it in that dumpster. I mean, everything's in there. You know, there could be any old garbage in there. And I just get the feeling that rinsing it with water is not enough.
It's not.
I mean, this guy's been in there. This guy's been cavorting in a bunch of dumpsters all night. Each dumpster, he's like a bee pollinating. He's tearing different types of filth from dumpster to dumpster and then handling this food.
You know, I have another real concern. Speaking of this guy, I'm looking through these photos on their website. There's this photo where this one guy, I just put it into the little chat thing. This guy, he's wearing homemade pants. They're posing under some kind of painting of a mushroom. They all look kind of like blissed out and obnoxious.
I mean, the room they're in is filled with sand.
I couldn't deal with the atmosphere.
Their room is filled
with sand. You mean the atmosphere of serving garbage?
That part doesn't bother me as much as these people being obnoxious.
I like how after the picture of them, there's another picture of them and then a fruit platter. What sort of photo gallery is this? Here's a picture of her licking some cupcakes. What? They found cupcakes in the garbage? And now...
They probably found flour and sugar and stuff.
No.
So you guys are not going to this restaurant?
I mean, not only am I not going there, I'm going to get it shut down.
Absolutely.
I mean, when the first person dies... because they like threw some sort of toxic waste into that dumpster. It's going to be a sad day for everyone. It's just not worth it. A free meal is not worth it.
No, it's true.
This literally also makes me think about that episode of Portlandia with those dumpster divers, and they're making that lentil soup meal, and it's just like crusty, stale bread. I mean, yeah, I get it. You cut up a green pepper and a red pepper and you take a close picture of it and you've misted it with water. It looks fresh. But, I mean, there's a reason why they threw it off the shelf. No. No, 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 no.
No.
I mean, I only hazard to guess where they've got all their cooking supplies from. No. No,
their cooking supplies, like you mean their equipment?
Yeah.
Your concern is their equipment?
Well, I mean,
I'm concerned about the whole thing.
I'm surprised they're not preparing it in the dumpster.
All right.
It's a hate fest.
No, I like it. This restaurant, the food they're preparing, not super exciting. But in principle, if they were making food that I wanted to eat, I would have no problem eating there.
Well,
wait, where is this?
It's in Boston.
Why is it on CBC then?
And you know what? Before the show, I fearlessly predicted, because one of our unnamed listeners is always... giving the feedback that when everybody hates the other business topic, it's no good when it's just the hate fest. And I said, don't worry, Patrick will be into it. Patrick will be open to it. Chris, Patrick received this like package of army ration sausages, which were expired and thrown into a dumpster. And then they were given to him after that point by a dumpster diver, a friend of ours.
Tell me none of this story is true.
It's a true story.
All of it's true.
And then he...
They were literally army ration sausages.
And then he kept them for quite a long time. And Emily, Patrick's significant other, continued to try and tell him to throw them in the garbage, at which point he would become slightly upset and say, no, I'm going to eat them. Don't throw it out. Don't throw it out. And
they were sealed. Though, to be honest, you know, those government sausages aren't going to be the best made sausages.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Not from the world's happiest pigs.
And what is the ending of this story, Patrick?
How does the story end?
I ended up throwing them out.
Go ahead.
Well, don't worry. I'm sure somebody else found them, and now they're being served at the Gleaner's Kitchen.
Mm-hmm. They made their way to Boston.
These perfectly good sausages that were only expired by 9 years. Delicious. And so ends another episode of What's the Deal? Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Yeah. Well, that was exciting. I'm glad everyone's back. Hey, Chris, you know what?
Yeah, I'm glad we're back.
But before we go into our wrap up, Chris, I think you should do a final plug for your movie here.
Oh, I'd love to. So
how can they find it on the internet, Chris?
You can go to Indiegogo and search for Focus. We have a website, but there's nothing on the website right now. You can go to facebook.com/ Viewers Like You Films. Our company is called Viewers Like You, and that would be where you can get the most information about the movie. You can see set photographs, interviews with cast and crew members. It's pretty exciting, and you can go to Indiegogo and search for Focus to help to contribute. It would be terrific of you.
What scene in the movie can you see Patrick and I?
Most of them.
Awesome. Okay, we'll definitely donate in that case.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, perfect. Well, I hope that people, you know, if they enjoy this show, they'll enjoy your show.
I think so. It's kind of a workplace comedy. It's kind of like Office Space a little bit. Office Space mixed with 12 Angry Men.
And a little bit of Ronin.
Mostly a lot of Ronin, actually.
And a bit of Seven Samurai.
There's a lot of that, too.
We got it all.
Some of Wild Strawberries?
Most, yeah.
Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants is in there a bit.
There's some Avatar in there. Mm-hmm. You know, blue people. And they're not really there, though, because they're in, like, the virtual reality part of the movie.
The movie so has it all.
That's the part of the movie that's like Hackers, right?
Yeah, yeah. We've got Sandra Bullock, you know. We got Angelina Jolie back when she was still really hot. Now she's still attractive, but you know she's really smoking hot, like back in those days.
I just look at her and I see John Voight. That's always been my problem.
Oh, me too. Well, actually, no, but still, I know what you mean.
But next week
we cut John Voight out of the movie. He's on the cutting room floor.
Mm.
He showed up and was really difficult to work with.
Did he bite your arm?
He bought one of the girls' arms.
He bought it?
Bit.
Next week on What's the Deal, we'll be looking at The Pez Dispenser, the 31st episode of Seinfeld.
Oh,
and what I must say is a very good episode.
Yeah.
And in that episode, Jerry and Elaine go along with George to see his new girlfriend's piano recital. And Jerry creates a bit of a stir by bringing out his Pez dispenser at an inopportune time. Kramer creates a cologne that smells like the beach. And boy, I gotta say, this is a great episode. I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping my voice is better. What do you guys think of my voice right now? Is it
I think it's better, worse,
or the same as the beginning
of the show? It's not as sexy as it was at the beginning of the show, but it's still fine.
Mm.
In the Pez dispenser, Jerry causes Elaine to laugh loudly at a piano recital.
Pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Cameron, tell us about cotton dockers.
Please don't kill the snakes.
Levi's, 100% cotton dockers.
Very good.
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah, so, boy, here's what I'd like you to do one final time. Visit whatsthedealshow.com. Check out our show notes. You can look at our back episodes. And heck, Chris Young is back. Maybe, just maybe he'll have a little picture for you up on the website. So definitely check that out.
Oh, it's up there.
But don't stop there. No, no. Hit up the social media. Patrick, tell us how.
Yeah, we tweet at WTD Show, and we're on Facebook. You go to facebook.com/whatsthedealshow. Interact with us there. Social media with us.
Now,
that's what you do in the future.
Are we available on
your
Facebook,
Facebook phone? Yeah, definitely. You can see our chat bubble or something. Chathead?
Whatever so it's called. A bobbler.
Yeah, a bobbler.
A bibby, I think. Is it a bib?
Bibble bobble.
Bubble bobble. Bubble bobble.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And boy, you know what? There's one other thing you can do. Something that that would really help us out.
It would really help us. The internet provides many ways of rating things. And what you can do to help What's the Deal show is you can go to Yelp and you can just tell people how bad an idea this Gleaner's Kitchen is. It's just anyone thinking about eating food out of a dumpster, whether it's prepared by themselves or not, you can really help us out by just telling them what a stupid idea that is.
Just stop them.
Stop them. Hey, is it just me or did the girl on your community blog get another photo?
It's a new picture. It is a new picture.
She looks sour now. She's not as cute.
I'm sure she's all torn up. I'm sure she's all torn up about this.
All right. Oh, you can also go to iTunes and you can rate our show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, one or five stars. People in the know give us 5 stars, but people that eat food at dumpsters, they also give us 5 stars.
Something for the freegan and non-freegan alike.
Yeah. You know, it feels good with Chris back because we've gone several consecutive weeks with, I think, not insulting any particular group of people. And I think we've certainly put off freegans this week.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but I mean, let's face it, they're probably at the public library leeching off the Wi-Fi listening to our show anyway.
Our listenership was going up, but now, happily, it's
Don't worry, I'll put a stop to that.
Oh, boy. Well,
but I do want to thank Justin for filling in for me again.
Yeah, what a good job he did.
Did a terrific job, yeah. He maybe didn't insult enough people. But he did do a good job. And Lord knows he likes his Seinfeld.
Yeah, he does. We can have him back on as a guest sometime. We can have 4 people on the show.
Sure. Yes. She does look a little bit sour now.
Well, I hate to turn the mood sour on our listeners, but I just want to say, in closing, thank you very much, as always, for listening to our show. Listening to my new deep baritone voice as I say thank you very much. And I'm not the only one. A hearty thank you, as always, from Christopher Young.
Oh, you're welcome.
Patrick Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
And myself, Cameron Wong. Thank you very much. And we will be with you again next week.
George deserved it. He had it coming.
Why? I don't understand that, actually.
Because he was being dishonest to this woman, you know?
Yeah, she's a thief.
Trying to trick her into... Yeah, but he didn't know that when he was trying to trick her.
Yeah, no.
Maybe I'm just a monster.
I feel
monster,
like he might be.
Just blaming the victim. Men.